This is David Smallwood with Northwestern Mutual and True Wealth Partners coming to you from Nashville, Tennessee, and you're listening to Black Men Sundays.
It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away. I refuse to be the man I was yesterday. Gotta put my best foot forward and elevate.
What's going on, everybody? This is Black Men Sundays. I'm your host, Corey Sylvester Murray, and we're talking about generational wealth. We're talking about mental health, finance, and business. And before we introduce today's guest, my brother Eric from Huntsville, aka Hunts Vegas, Alabama, who's looking like he's having some focusing troubles with his phone. How you doing, brother? Who do you have for our spotlight?
Hey, Corey, thanks for that, man. I appreciate that and everything. I don't really have no focusing problem on my phone. I'm just trying to get things. My phone is kind of locking up on me. I was going to kind of do had a little graphic of the person who I was speaking with, but today's spotlight, I'm not going to be able to get up, but the spotlight I have today is going to be no other than this person. His name is Darryl Davis. Now, Darryl Davis was once an aspiring and successful musician. He played with Chuck Berry, B.B. King, and Jerry Lee Lewis in Muddy Waters. Now, however, his true claim to fame was a legacy that he had forged or had come in a different way. He went out of his way to befriend a KKK Grand Wizard by the name of Roger Kelly. Now, he spent years building trust between them and laying the foundation on what became a friendship. So they broke bread at each other's tables. They welcomed each other in their homes. Then Davis went out as far as attending Klan rallies as a guest of Kelly. Now, most importantly, Davis cultivated an atmosphere of listening. He didn't hate Kelly because Kelly hated him, but instead he listened to Kelly. Kelly started listening to him. So these two began to talk, and next thing you know, this led up to the two realizing that they had far more in common than they didn't. So in the end, Kelly denounced his ties to the KKK. So much so, he handed over his hood and robe to Mr. Darryl Davis. Now, in total, Davis has seen over 2,000 Klan members walk away from the KKK and handed over their robes and hoods to Darryl. So Darryl Davis is a world changer, replacing hate with love, because love always conquers all every time. That's my spotlight for today, Mr. Darryl Davis. Now back to you.
Hey, man. I don't know if y'all reception is any good in Huntsville. Y'all call it Hunts Vegas, so y'all should have towers everywhere. Man, your shot is frozen, bro. What's up?
It is. Like I said,
oh, yeah, man, you locked up. Tell me that's an Android.
Of course not, man. It's an iPhone. You know, we know we rock with Apple all the way, man.
Okay, well, nah, you know, you Alabama A&M. You know, you the wrong A&M, so I didn't know which I was rocking with.
Ah.
All right, brother. I appreciate that spotlight, man.
All right, thank you.
Yes. So let's go on and introduce today's guest. We're talking to David Smallwood. This brother's a wealth management advisor for Northwestern Mutual in Nashville, a.k.a. Cashville, Tennessee. This brother also partnered with Corner to Corner, a Nashville-based nonprofit. And, you know, when I'm talking about where I'm going to be with wealth in 10 years, me and my brother Kalali, we talked about it yesterday. And I said, well, he said, you know what, in 10 years, if we're having the same conversation, we doing something wrong. So I just want, you know, I'm thinking about where will I be in 10 years? And I see with Corner to Corner, you guys are trying to create 10,000 new black owned businesses in the next decade. So the number's 10 today. So without further ado, David Smallwood, welcome to Black Men Sundays, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing great, you guys. It's good to be here with you. I was excited to have this opportunity to share with you when the team said, hey, we've got a group of folks who are trying to close this racial wealth gap and make a difference. It was an exciting opportunity and glad to be here with you guys today.
Wealth and Management Advisor for Northwestern Mutual. Just break it down to us. Like, what do you do there?
Yeah, so I would refer to what I call a wealth management advisor. And, you know, a lot, if you were to look at that in print, you may say a financial advisor or financial planner. And it's really around what I call comprehensive financial planning. It's about folks having a plan that they're tracking towards to reach their long-term financial goals and to know what that looks like, not just during their accumulation phase while they're saving, but when they get to distribution, to have a rock solid plan in place to make sure that they're going to run out of time before they run out of money.
Oh, definitely. That's great information, man, because, you know, one thing we've had a lot of financial advisors on. So we definitely know the wealth steps. You know, we're just, I feel like for me, I'm still in the accumulation phase because I just don't feel like with this inflation, there's no such thing as, okay, I've accumulated enough. It's like, no, I need to accumulate some more because I watched this commercial. It had two 90-year-old women that said, don't let the younger you take money from the older you. And then they were on a Zoom and they said their boss just got out of puberty. And I was just like, wow. Like, you know, so when we're talking about, because our show is about generational wealth, finance, and business, right? So when we talk about building a financial legacy, like I said, we've had financial advisors, accountants on. So we know, okay, we're in that accumulation phase. Mm-hmm. But I feel like sometimes, you know, I'm not going to lie, when that money starts coming out of my account every month, I'm like, or every 2 weeks, I'm like, oh, I could have used that for this. Oh, I could have used it for that. But then after a year, I'll go look at that balance and I'm like, wow. So as Black people, when we're in the accumulation phase, it's so easy to get in a financial jam where it's like, you know what? I need $2,000, right? You know what? I can take it out of that account. Let's talk about the do's and don'ts about the accumulation phase.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just a couple of things is that there's a general misconception that when we get through that accumulation phase into distribution, that there's somehow going to be a pot of gold there. And there's not going to be a pot of gold. When we get to the point where either we are forced to retire or work becomes optional, we have to have accumulated and created paychecks to pay us in retirement. And if we have not thrown money into the future to create paychecks, those paychecks won't be there. Social Security will be there, but it's likely going to fall woefully short based on what you just said earlier about inflation and the fact that that benefit does not just cover lifestyle expenses of living in the United States. And so it's very important to be thinking about how do we systematically throw dollars into the future to create paychecks that are going to be there when we get to that point, because there's nobody showing up with those dollars if we don't.
Yeah, that's great information. Yeah, because, you know, with me, you know, I look at saving money, but I'm like, man, you know, me and the wife just went out for two drinks and an appetizer. I'm like, $30? I haven't even given a tip yet. I'm struggling with that. So it's like, and then my credit card, I got a notice from my credit card company. Oh, by the way, your interest rate is going up to XYZ. I'm like, what? So it's like, how do we stay involved financially in this accumulation phase when we have all these exterior factors that are basically sucking away that money?
Yeah, that's a good Corey. So I would say it's a couple of things is that really there's a general idea to think about is that if we wake up every day and we think, hey, you know what? There's three things. If I can give, save, and live. And so every dollar that comes in, let me give something to make the world a better place. Let me save something. And saving typically for most folks to reach their financial goals is going to mean saving 20% of their income on an annual basis, and then live. And that's live off of the rest. And so if we can think about give, save, and live, with every single dollar that comes in, that's how we reach long-term goals. It's what I call giving every dollar a home. And part of what I do as a financial advisor and a financial planner is that I'm sitting down with a client and I'm talking about what their goals are. And I'm saying, if you and I were sitting down, I'd say, hey, Corey, you know, when do you see work becoming optional? And if you do keep working, it's because you want to and not because you have to. And you may say, hey, Dave, I see that at 60 or 65. And then I say, OK, if you say it's 65 and I say, hey, assuming your lifestyle is going to be about the same, how much after tax income would you need to live off of, thinking about it in today's dollars? And you say, hey, I need $7,000 a month, $10,000 a month. And so you tell me I need $7,000 or $10,000 a month. And then I say, OK, let's see if we want that those dollars to last over a 30-year period from 65 to 95 years old, that you're going to have $7,000 a month of after-tax income. So then we back that up to today, and I look at your financial picture of where you are right now today and see what you're, where you're saving and what you're doing. And then I say, okay, Corey, if you keep doing exactly what you're doing right now today out to 65 of that work optional date, here's numerically where you're going to be when you get there and how much you're going to be able to live off of and how long that money's going to last. But based on what you shared with me about what your goals are, here are some specific recommendations that I would make on the buckets that you need to be saving into to make sure that when you get to that freedom date, you're going to have $7,000 a month of after-tax income, inflation adjusted for 30 years from now, and it's going to last you all the way throughout your distribution years, and you're going to make sure that you run out of time before you run out of money. Now, when we back that up to today and we put that plan in place and I show you where you need to start saving to reach those long-term goals, if you start deploying those dollars towards getting to that work optional date, everything else is guilt-free money to enjoy life now. As long as you're doing what you need to do to reach those goals, you can take those trips, you can buy those Jordans, you can do the things that you want to do, because we know we're deploying the dollars that we need to the future to make sure we're going to have a plan in place when we get there.
Oh, great information, man. And I kind of want to just lightly transition. We're going to get back to the financials, but I want to talk about partnerships. You know, with Black Men Sundays, we partner with the Boys and Girls Club of Central Florida. We partner with the Mental Health Association of Central Florida. We understand partnerships are essential. You partner with Corner to Corner, a Nashville-based nonprofit. So what was the impetus of that? And what about that nonprofit made you decide, you know what, we want to partner with them?
Yeah, great question. The reason why I partnered with Corner to Corner is simply because as being a wealth management advisor here in Tennessee, I knew that it wasn't just about helping people save for their future, that I had to figure out a way to start to give back into the community and empower the community with some of these financial principles. And so instead of reinventing the wheel, I'm always looking for folks who are already doing certain things and where I can come alongside them and lock arms with folks who may be in a complementary lane to what I'm doing. And Corner to Corner is one of those organizations. And what Corner to Corner does is that they've said, hey, that the average Black family is about a tenth wealth-wise of the average white family in terms of economic empowerment. And so they've said, you know what, that's creating a $1.6 trillion loss to the American people because of that gap. And so they've said, hey, one of the ways that we can close that gap is through Black entrepreneurship, that there's an intuitive, instinctive, I would call just inside of Black folks' DNA to want to be entrepreneurs and make things happen. And so Corner to Corner said, hey, let's empower them to do that. Let's create a pathway to create micro entrepreneurs in the Black community, and let's let those dollars recycle back into the Black community. And that can be one way to close the racial wealth gap that's separate from a welfare system, or saying, hey, let me just give you some dollars and see what you can do. Let's empower you to be an entrepreneur and a business owner and change your family's generational legacy.
Yeah, because, you know, doing a little research, I saw you guys, the goal is to create 10,000 new Black-owned businesses in the next 10 years. So that's why I kind of led with the 10-year conversation, because me and my brother was talking about that. So, you know, when we're talking about creating 10,000 new Black-owned businesses, you know, because we have entrepreneurs that listen to our show. We have the whole realm, you know, CEOs that listen. But to say that, okay, our goal is to create 10,000 Black-owned businesses in the next decade. If I'm someone that's saying, you know what, I kind of want to start a business. From your point of view, as a wealth management advisor, if I'm new, I have money, but I don't really know how to get my business going. I know I can go SunBiz or whatever, create the LLC, but once that's done, I don't really know what to do there. So what advice would you have for new entrepreneurs?
Yeah, so for new entrepreneurs, there's a couple things or a few things that I would have them be thinking about. One is that I would say get connected with an organization like in your city, like a Corner to Corner, an organization that really is going to empower you to provide the things around your business idea that help you to get it off the ground. I would call it very similar to if you were in Silicon Valley in the West Coast, you know, folks, entrepreneurs go into what's called incubators. That incubator says, hey, you're taking your business into a spot where we're going to put all the brain power around you. We're not going to run the business for you, but we're going to provide you with the resources and the brain power to take your business from infancy to adolescence to adulthood. That's what Black business owners need, is a shepherding along the way. It's not just that, you know, it's not always just even about the resources and writing a check, because I could write a check to a small business owner, but if they don't know how to deploy those dollars to grow their business, that's futile to do. So I would say get connected with organizations that help to shepherd your business from infancy to adulthood and provide you with the resources along the way, because that's really what Corner to Corner is doing. They're saying, hey, we're going to put you in a 10-week cohort that we're gonna you know, give you the brain power and the people power and the resources to get your business off the ground, not just here's a check and go make it happen.
Oh man, you rocking. Great information. Okay. So let's talk real quick, because I kind of led into it without going in. You know, when I'm talking about the interest rates, the expenses of dining, you know, credit card rates going up. I feel like budgeting is a challenge now. Like for me, like I would have a couple credit cards, splash that money there, splash that with these rates. And I'm sitting here like, man, I can't even get a Big Mac combo for under $10. So with inflation, how do we budget? And I feel like the money saving techniques that I was using 2 years ago, and I was killing it. I was loving it. I was like, wow, this is awesome. But then as the rate started increasing, I'm like, man, I'm giving them the same money, but I'm like, man, I'm still feeling like I'm coming up short. So how do we, in this financial climate, how do we budget? Like, what money saving tips can you share with us?
Yeah. So in this environment, it's a few things, and part of it, some of the things are not just are not a short term fix. But one of the things that I'm sharing with my clients is eliminate any revolving debt as fast as you possibly can. Because as we look at dollars, each dollar, and I mentioned earlier about deploying and giving every dollar a home. Well, there's two ways to throw a dollar. You can throw it backwards towards debt, and if you throw money backwards towards debt, if you throw it $1 back towards debt, about 80 cents is going to hit the debt, and 20 goes poof towards interest. And so the sooner we can eliminate throwing money backwards towards debt, the better off we're going to be. And then what we want to do is throw money forward in the future, because then it multiplies. Money thrown to the future multiplies. So the farther into the future we can throw it, the more it's going to compound with compound interest and grow. And so we need to be thinking about, we got to throw money 15, 20 years in the future, because that's how we outpace inflation, is by throwing dollars into the future that are in the equities market that over time are going to get a yield that outpaces inflation. If you look at the average inflation over the last 100 years, you're going to get much more yield off of saving money in equities. Because if you look at the stock market, the S&P 500, back to 1928 to present day, it's double digits. It's 10 to 11% yield that you have gotten over the course of that 100 years. Now, there's volatility or temporary price movement in there, but over the course of that duration of time, you're going to get a yield that's going to outpace inflation. And so I'm sharing with clients, you've got to be throwing dollars into the future. And one the best place to do that is if you're employed, is inside of a qualified plan through your employer, 401k, 403b, 457, et cetera.
Yeah, no, that's great information, man. And, you know, I ask all of our financial guests this question. When I look at the stock market, Bitcoin, real estate, bonds, what's the best way these days to build generational wealth?
Slow and steady wins the race. So what I mean, and I'm not being coy when I say that, what I mean by that is if somebody dropped $100,000 in the S&P 500 in 1986, and it was 100% equities just in the S&P 500 in an equities based portfolio, and they set it and forget it, 30 years later, it'd be $2 million. And so that's just sitting in the S&P 500. That's not going and rebalancing. That's just letting it sit there. So if you imagine that you're getting that time and that compounded growth, that's what happens if you're saving over time. If you're 30 or 40 and you're saving over time, you're going to get that compounded growth. And so it doesn't have to be fancy, because what happens is people mix up risk and volatility. They think, hey, if I got $100,000 in my 401k and it goes down to $80,000, they say I lost $20,000. No, they didn't lose $20,000 unless they took it out. If they're 30 years old and they can't touch that account for another 30 years, it going from 100 down to 80 is just temporary price movement. Over time, it's always going to trend in the right direction. It's just that we don't want to have to touch it at the wrong time. So it's really not about being fancy. It's about just saying, hey, if I am invested in the equities markets and the S&P 500, I don't have to be a rocket scientist or have a crystal ball, because I know given enough time, the market is going to move in the right direction. I just don't want to have to touch it at the wrong time. Now, to answer your question, you a little bit more about what you said earlier about, hey, in these times of inflation, how do I save? How do I do more? What I'm sharing with clients is I said, hey, you know what? And I did this myself 10, 15 years ago when I needed to do a reset. There was a 22-year period where I didn't have a new car. I only bought used cars and I paid cash for them. So any money that would have been going towards a car payment was going towards savings. And so there are a lot of folks now that are driving 30, 40, 50,000 luxury cars, and they're paying payments of $500 to $1,000 a month on those cars, where instead of they could go and buy a car outright, have no payment, save those dollars towards the future and let it compound. And you'd be amazed what those dollars, you amortize, say, 5 to 10 years of a car payment, or that being in equities markets, you're going to make a difference in your generational legacy just by doing that.
Well, with that being said, because this is Black Men Sundays, I don't ask all the questions. My brothers, if y'all have any questions, talk to Brother Smallwood. Let's go.
Okay, Mr. Smallwood, well, this is Kalali, living in Prince Frederick, Maryland. First of all, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for taking time with us. I'm kind of feeling it. I'm not even going to lie. I'm kind of feeling it today with the time change and everything. So I imagine you're probably feeling it too. You've been traveling and things like that. So definitely appreciate you taking the time. Question I want to ask you is, or I got a couple questions to ask you, but the first question I want to ask you is, Chris Rock famously said there's a difference between rich and wealthy. Do you agree with that statement? And what is the difference to you between being rich and being wealthy?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say I do agree with that statement. And I would say to you, the difference between being rich and being wealthy is, a lot of times when you would refer to rich is something you have to do to maintain it and keep going and keep hustling. Wealth is something that you've created that it's passively operating for you. Even when you may not be doing anything, there are dollars being created and generated that create that ongoing wealth. Riches can come and go, but wealth is usually what's generational, because if you've created something that's enduring and generating, what I would call passive income and that ongoing compounded growth that you can't even outspend, that's true wealth. So that's one side of the difference between being rich and being wealthy. And then the other side of the difference between being rich and being wealthy is rich a lot of times really just refers to dollars and cents. It is money, is how much money or how many things do you have. Wealth to me refers to other areas of your life, of how are you spiritually, mentally, physically, relationally. All those areas combined is what creates true wealth. And riches can be fleeting, but true wealth is created by all the being healthy in all of those other areas of your life as well.
Oh, wow. No, I appreciate that. That's a really good answer. I really appreciate that. It's interesting in our journey on this show, we've actually been discovering that. It's like, it's one thing to be able to accumulate money. It's another thing to be in the right spiritual and mental place to be able to actually be able to use that money in a way that's going to be useful, not only for you, but your family, your community, et cetera. One of the things that I really enjoyed that you've been talking about is how you deploy your money, right? So that's what we kind of talking about, right? Is like, if you're deploying your money, I guess, just on, things like, material things that come and go, like fancy cars and different things like that, as opposed to what I really like what you were saying. and is throwing your money into the future, into things that, you know, into things that generate money for you in the future or have more value for you in the future, as opposed to, you know, accumulating these debts, then, you know, you can do a lot better accumulating wealth. So I thought that was really cool how you phrased that. I might even use that, you know, in a discussion with my wife later on, is we need to be throwing more money into the future and less money into the past. We touched on inflation a few times already. You know, I think inflation is an interesting discussion. So I'm going to ask you, how concerned do you think we should be about inflation, really? And does that concern about inflation depend on what financial class you're in, or is it just about what strategy you're using with your money?
I think it depends on, it does depend on what, you know, the uber wealthy are not necessarily as concerned about inflation. If we're working class or we're working towards our financial futures, I do believe that we need to be cognizant of inflation, but not from the perspective of being fearful of not wanting to save for the future or thinking that we shouldn't save. I think that we need to be thinking about what does our financial picture look like? Most of the clients that I work with, they've got three segments of their financial pictures, what I call home run, aggressive, and safe. So home run is your business opportunities, your real estate, your small business, your entrepreneurship. I'm all for the home run opportunity because that's going to be what's going to end up being your most significant return is going to be with your home run opportunity. Then the aggressive lives in the middle. That's market facing money. That's saving inside of a mutual fund account, saving in retirement account, 529 accounts for kids, dollar cost averaging and saving into investments. That's that aggressive money. Then safe money is money that's not in the market on the roller coaster, and that's money that's in a couple of places. It's cash inside of the bank, so that's safe money. The upside of that is it's liquid and easily accessible. The downside of that is that it's yielding next to nothing, and the growth on it is taxable. So combination of low yield and taxable growth is not a great place to have dollars deployed for the long term. So partly how I help people think about that safe money is inside of life insurance, because it grows at tax deferred at a dividend rate versus a bank rate, and it creates a death benefit that's promises to be the last asset on your balance sheet. And so those three segments, that home run, aggressive, and safe, we got to focus on all of those. Where folks get in trouble is they just focus on one or two and not all three, because we have to focus on all three, because while when we're young, we want to just go for all the home run opportunities. Then as we start to get towards middle age, we say, hey, everything can't be a home run. I need some doubles and singles. And so let me do all the aggressive. And then if folks get closer to retirement and work becoming optional, there's a growing appreciation for the safety of those safe dollars. But you don't want to get to that point where you want the safety of those safe dollars, and they're all inside of a vehicle or an instrument that's getting beat up by inflation. And so that's why you need to be thinking about all three of those segments of your financial picture all throughout your accumulation phase to make sure you're preparing for what's coming ahead.
Wow. That's like I said, we always talk about dropping gems on this show. You dropping gems right now. Appreciate that. Go ahead.
No, I'll say, yeah, absolutely.
For sure. Now you know what, we really appreciate your transparency on a lot of what you're saying. Let me just shift real quick. You had touched on, you know, the corner to corner partnership and how, you know, they're focusing on recycling money back into the Black community. Do you have any advice or additional tips for how we can come together to recycle money back into the Black community?
Yeah, I would say it's supporting Black-owned businesses as much as you possibly can. I mean, there's a here in Nashville, there's a Black Business Monthly. There's where all Black businesses get together, sort of like a flea market where everybody comes together. And my wife and I, or my wife alone, goes out and supports that every month and buys something and it's quality stuff. And it's not just to go, it's to support and to say we're supporting those Black-owned businesses. At the church that I attend, two or three times a year, We have all of these Black-owned food trucks come out, and it's a huge church, and they come out, and then we do a picnic in the park after church one day. A lot of times those business owners say they generate more revenue in that one day of coming out to the church than they do for half of the year of the rest of the business. So it's doing things and engaging of saying, not just can I in an ongoing basis support Black business owners, but how can I think of creative ways to bring them together for spontaneous opportunities to support them in a big way?
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, appreciate that. Once again, definitely appreciate all that information. Appreciate you showing up on the show today and talking with us. Thank you. That's all the questions I have.
Appreciate it, brother, for coming on and everything. I just wanted to say that I totally agree with you as far as your mode of thinking as far as pushing a lot of the money to the future. I'm an accountant by trade, so I definitely try to advise a lot of my clients to do the same thing or whatever. And I guess my question for you is, I'm real curious about the whole recycling of the Black dollar. Do you possibly have any type of, tips or any type of leads on maybe some type of investment groups or anything to kind of, you know, stay abreast of the updated possible stock tips or anything that may be out there, the new trends and everything that might be going as far, so that way that we can kind of stay updated on exactly what's the new type of investments and everything to jump into?
So I not specific. So when I refer to recycling the Black dollar, I'm actually referring to investing in those businesses from a micro level, meaning just supporting them directly, not necessarily supporting Black businesses via stocks or, you know, mutual funds or investments. What I would say as it relates to that, I don't have specifics about, you know, Black-owned funds or anything like that. My focus has been more on just how do I just support directly those small Black business owners. And my focus in doing that has been finding organizations like a Corner to Corner that I can support directly all of the entrepreneurs connected to that. And I would say in every state now, there are organizations like a Corner to Corner who give direct support to Black business owners and allow others like myself who are just, you know, concerned citizens or citizens who have a heart for that to get involved.
Okay, well, thanks again. Once again, brother, appreciate you jumping on and everything. Like I said, I definitely learned a lot today, and yes, most definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And Corey, if I could share one more thing, because it sort of brings all together some of the things that you guys have been saying and asking me about, is that, you know, and I feel like this is particularly important for Black families, no matter where they are, where they are on their financial journey, is that when I'm sitting down and talking to them about a financial plan, I'm talking to them about two sides of a financial plan, and that's offense and defense. So offensively, it's your wealth accumulation. It's the money that you're making over the course of your lifetime that hopefully you're going to get to the point one day where if you do keep working, it's because you want to and not because you have to. And so I'm helping folks think through what buckets do they need to be saving into on that offensive side for the short term, having an emergency fund built up of anywhere between 3 and 12 months in cash that can be deployed for emergencies, midterm money that can be used not necessarily for retirement, but for a big purchase or put kids through college, et cetera. And then long-term money, which is retirement money that you can't touch until after age 59 and a half. And so how do you save into those buckets offensively to get to that point where work can become optional? So that's on the offensive side. Then on the defensive side, which is equally, if not more important, is the what ifs. It's making sure that a family has an up-to-date will and estate plan in place. And a will and estate plan is not just about, you know, if somebody dies, here's where my money goes. It's directives around power of attorney with your health, power of attorney with your dollars. And so making sure, you know, if folks have families and they have kiddos, the will is what's going to determine who takes care of their kids and how those dollars and assets are going to be deployed to make sure that their family is going to be taken care of. So up-to-date will in place. And then the other component of that defense is going to be life insurance, making sure that they're the right amount, and right type of life insurance in place. Most of the time I meet with people and they say, I ask them what do they have in life insurance? And most people have life insurance in increments of 100,000, 250, 500, or a million. And I say, well, how'd you come up with what you got? And they say, well, my farm bureau or my Allstate person that does my car insurance said, if I'd add this, bundle this in, I'd get a discount. So I just added that on. And I share with them that life insurance is the check that shows up that if anybody doesn't make it home, there's a couple of things that families are thinking about. One, it's we want to make sure all debt can be paid off, that we don't leave the family with any debt. Two, if there's desire to educate the kiddos, we want dollars there to educate the kiddos. And then three, which is the most important, is that if somebody doesn't make it home, that person's income and all of their savings associated with that income is gone forever. We need a check that shows up that replaces that so there can be continuity with the family's long-term wealth plan. If it doesn't cover that, it's not, you're falling woefully short. And I ask people, if right now today I said to you, I'm gonna write you a check, but in exchange for this check, you can never work or generate income for another day in your entire life. How much would that check have to be for you to walk away from income for the remainder of your life? And most of us are going to have a 7- and 8-figure check that they're going to say that they would need in order for me to never get income again. That's the amount of life insurance you should think about having, because that's what needs to show up for your family if you cannot earn that income anymore. So the life insurance is the other piece. And then the third piece of that defense is long-term disability, which is income protection that says if you're sick or injured or sidelined and out of work for more than 90 days, you got a benefits that's coming in, that your income doesn't go down to zero and you got to start liquidating stuff. But the family, once again, can have a continuity plan to reach long-term goals. So that offense and defense together is what creates a comprehensive financial plan. And that's what I encourage everybody to sit down and get a comprehensive financial plan based on your situation on the offensive side and defensive side.
Hey, Corey, man, this man preaching today, ain't he?
Yeah, I was going to say, man, he giving it to us. It is Black Man Sunday, baby. Let's go. Definitely, man. And one thing I wanted to mention, because you said the kiddos. My brother Kalali has two kids. My brother Gary's got a kid. When we're talking about financial literacy for our youth, because the beautiful thing about Black Men Sunday is like your episode 104. But, you know, we've had these similar conversations. Like we've had a brother, Dr. Marlon Fuller. He came up with the first hip hop album where he had his daughter rapping it, speaking about financial literacy for the youth. Then I've had, you know, other brothers that have written books, kid books, but they're talking about financial literacy for kids. So the question for you is, when we're talking about financial literacy for our youth, at what age should we start teaching them about financial literacy? Because I asked a brother a few months ago, like, I feel like if you start the kids too young, it's just going to go over their head. They're not going to get it. So from your point of view as a wealth management advisor, like, what would you say to that? Like, at what age is the appropriate age to where you know your child's really going to absorb the information, not just in and out?
That's a good question, Corey. So there's simplicity to that answer. And it's something that I started with, that you should start kids out in grade school, and you start them out with grade school with the exact same thing that I shared when I started this program. I said the simplicity of reaching your long-term financial goals is based on doing three things: give, save, and live. So if you start a kid out in grade school and you say, hey, every dollar you get from your allowance that you earn, you're going to give something to the church or an organization, something that's important to you. Let them pick what they want to give to. So every dollar that comes in, give something. Then you open them up a savings account and you say you're going to save something. So let's say you take 10 cents and you give it. You take 20 cents and you save it. And then that other 70 cents, do whatever you want. Go buy your Jordans. Go do whatever you want. But you teach a kid from the start to give, save, and live. That's the same template that if they carry that throughout adulthood, that middle bucket of the save, if it stays at 20 cents or 20%, they're going to reach their long-term financial goals just off of those three things of give, save, and live.
Great information, man. And I have two more questions for you. I always ask our guests this question around this time of the show. Are you enjoying yourself on Black Men Sundays?
I'm having a phenomenal time on Black Men Sundays.
Definitely, man. Definitely, man. And my last question for you is, We've had guests come on the show that were heavy stock market. Invest everything in the stock market. We had guests, Bitcoin, I'm telling you, got to get on the Bitcoin. You know, we had real estate experts come on, numerous. But one thing that I get that's in common with all of them is they also mentioned about relationships in your community. Like we had a celebrity come on and said, you know what, you need to have a relationship with your chamber of commerce. So as a wealth management advisor, talking to brothers that are business owners, wanting to start a business, what do we need? Who do we need to have relationships with in our community that we may just be overlooking?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So I would, there's two parts of that I want to share is that I tell the folks that I mentor and that I'm connected to all the time that to be out in the community and make relationships because every opportunity is connected to a person. And so if every opportunity is connected to a person, you need to be out and among people. And secondarily to that is to be a giver and not a taker. And so the best way to make relationships is to see how you can make a difference in somebody else's lives. Whenever I'm sitting down with a client, before I ask them if there's anybody in their circle they can introduce me to that I can help, I ask them with what they're trying to do, who can I introduce them in my circle that can help what they're trying to do and accomplish? If they're an entrepreneur, I'm saying, do you need to know a CPA? Do you need to know a money, a lender? Who can I help introduce you to? So lead with how you can help somebody else. But to answer your question specifically, it's a couple of things. It's making sure that, you know, local chamber of commerce, and then specific chamber of commerce. If your area has a Black chamber of commerce, Rotary Club, all of those organizations, get connected to those because you never know when, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've been sitting down next to somebody at a random chamber meeting or one of those meetings, and a business opportunity is born out of just being in the room where it happens. You just got to get in rooms where it happens, and a lot of times being in rooms where it happens is volunteering. And so it's any organizations. I would say be a part of chambers and any business organizations that you can, and then I would say find a couple of nonprofit organizations that you can support. Every year, I'm buying a table at two or three nonprofits that I support. Now, why am I doing that? One is because I want to support those nonprofits. Secondly, is because I know that the other people in the room who are buying those tables are the kind of people that I want to be around and the kind of people that are going to help me to get to where I want to go. So it's sowing seeds to create those opportunities in your business and in your personal life. But I also want to touch on what you said earlier when you said you've had all of these different, you know, real estate, Bitcoin, you hear all of these different folks talking from these different lanes. What I want to tell you is that philosophically, what I believe is that people need to be diversified into all different buckets. There's no one silver bullet or right lane. It's being diversified, because if you are diversified, what I'm helping clients to think about is that when you get out of accumulation into distribution, the most important thing is that we want to have assets in places that we never want to have to touch them at the wrong time. I don't want all everything in real estate, because if my real estate hits a 2008, I don't want to have to liquidate it at the wrong time. So I want to be able to go to another cash reserve bucket that allows me to ride out until my real estate comes back. I don't want all my money in the stock market, because when the market goes down, I need to be able to go to my real estate or somewhere else so that I don't have to touch my market facing money when it's down. So it's the most important, the name of the game is diversification. And if you can think about diversifying now into different buckets while you're in accumulation, when you get to distribution, you will have flexibility and options because you won't have to touch money at the wrong time.
Oh yeah, man, he giving it to us, man. Hey, David Smallwood, I'm loving this conversation. I normally would wrap it up, but you kind of sparked another question that I have. And I know I've been asking you a ton about inflation, but I'm a little sore about inflation, man. $30 for two drinks. And I don't even know what my wife spent for my dinner for my birthday yesterday. I'm scared to ask her. You know what I mean? But I'm just saying, so, and this will wrap it up. I probably have one more after this, but my question for you is, when we're talking about this inflation, as a wealth management advisor, Are we going to be at the point where it's going to be, I'm going to have to spend $100 to go to pay for lunch? You know, I used to be able to get lunch for $4 or $5 and eat good, eat the premium stuff. Now, $4 or $5, you might just get a sandwich with nothing on it. You got to have $10 to $20 to really eat lunch. So when we're talking about accumulating my wealth, I'm not going to lie, a lot of my wealth goes to eating, and I ain't even eating fancy. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I'm eating like the quick drive-through food, and I'm sitting here like, man, I could have sat in a fancy restaurant and paid the same thing. But when we're talking about accumulating wealth, especially over the long haul, you know, because I do want to retire, but I'm a little nervous. I'm like, if the inflation looking like this now, I'm scared to see what it's going to be like, because I'm a news photojournalist. I go to people's houses. Sisters retired, had their financial advisor set their plans up for them. And then all of a sudden their kids move back in. Then the kids have kids move back in. And you know what they say? We have to go back to work. And that's my biggest fear, is when I retire, I don't want to think about going back to work. So what can you say to, I guess, give me some confidence about, okay, I'm stacking this money up, but how do I know the amount? Like, how do I know, okay, I should be fine here? Because we don't know what the cycles are going to be like then, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a fair question. And part of it I would say is unknown. We don't know, but to what I would say, at least I'm working with clients on, that gives them more confidence, is what I would call saving towards what I would call a bookend strategy. And a bookend strategy means, imagine on, you're saving towards your future, and you've got two bookends in place. And on one bookend is, can you get to retirement or that work optional date? And can you have created what it takes to run your household on a monthly basis from guaranteed source of income? That could be a pension through work. Social Security is going to be one of those. Social Security is a government funded pension. An annuity is a personally funded pension. That's taking a portion of your own money at some point and turning it into a stream of income. And then a lot of my clients have a fourth bucket on that left bookend, which is real estate. They all own multiple properties, and that's bringing in passive income every single month. So you think about those four things I just said on one bookend. So a pension, Social Security, an income annuity, which is a government, which is a personally funded pension, and in real estate, is if you can get to that work optional day. And let's go back to what we talked about earlier. Let's say you wanted to live off of $7,000 a month of after-tax income, inflation adjusted, when you get to retirement. Well, if you can, on that bookend, create what $7,000 is coming in as what's called mailbox money. Every single month you go down and you get the $7,000, like your Social Security check is there, your rental income is there, your annuity check is there, and those together cover your monthly expenses on one bookend. And then on the other bookend, if you can have 2 to 5 years in a cash reserve in a non-market correlating asset, that can be cash inside of the bank, or like we talked about earlier, it can be inside of life insurance that's growing at a dividend rate, tax deferred versus a bank rate. And so imagine you get to that work optional day and you go down to the mailbox every month and there's a check that covers your monthly expenses, and there's 2 to 5 years in cash that's not correlated to the market. Well, what happens is you have complete flexibility over when and how you distribute all of the money across the top out of your 401k, your investment account, your Roth IRA, et cetera. So you have more confidence that you're in peace in retirement, because you know you got mailbox money that's coming in every single month, and you're never going to have to touch that market facing money at the wrong time if you've got that bookend strategy in place.
Great information, man. Wow. Excellent. Excellent. And I have one last question for you. So if I told you, I knew a brother that was recognized as the Small Business Advocate of the Year by the African American Chamber of Commerce of Central Florida, would you say I need to be friends with him?
I would say you need to be friends with him.
There you go. There you go. David Smallwood, I appreciate all the gems. I could probably go another hour easily, but I'm not going to eat up all your clock. You know, thanks for coming on Black Men Sundays. Big salute. Much appreciation for everything you gave us, man. Because like I said, with Black Men Sundays, it's, you know, we've had financial advisors, accountants, all the financial flavors, or brothers who have, you know, these financial niches. So it's nice to be able to kind of put it all together and then ask you questions to really bring it all together. And I appreciate you, man, because you could have been anywhere in the world, but you came on Black Men Sundays and you killed the show. My brother Kalali said you killed him. He has a master's in public policy, so he ain't no chump now. He don't just say that to be nice. Like he's my one, besides my boy Blade, they the two cats that's gonna keep it real. Hey, these pants look good. Nah, they ugly. Take them off. That's real friends. So David Smallwood, man, I appreciate you. Thanks for coming on Black Men Sundays, brother. Enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy the rest of your week, man.
Thank you, brother. It's been a blessing to be here. Thank you for the opportunity. Keep doing great things. I'm always here if you need to talk or want to connect. Appreciate all that you guys are doing. Thank you. It's a Black Man Sunday.